got children for that.
Open the Senate Revenue Committee, and we are going to, our batting lineup for today will be, we will do Senate Bill 864 first, followed by House Bill 2622, and then lastly we'll do House Bill 2033. I will open a hearing, public hearing on Senate Bill 864. Paul, do you want to introduce the bill?
Real briefly, Mr. Chair, what the bill does is create a task force on state agency debt collection. And one thing I wanted to bring the attention to the committee is, if you are not familiar with this issue, over the last several biennia, there was a report issued on liquidated and delinquent accounts receivable June 30, 2001 by Legislative Fiscal Office. So this would be a continuation of that or building on that work that was done. It was released in December of 2001.
Thank you. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and member of the committee. I am Roger Beyer, State Senator, District 9. Before you, Senate Bill 864, and I'd like to start out by saying I really, at this point in time, don't know that we need another task force on this issue. What I needed, that there was another bill, House Bill 2055, that was moving through the process, and I had some amendments I wanted to attach to that bill, or at least be brought up. And the proponents of that bill asked me not to do that because House Bill 2055 is an extremely important bill. In fact, it will be on the House, on the Senate floor next week, I believe, if not earlier, later this week. And but there are some issues because after 1999, when we passed the first bill authorizing agencies to go out with private collection agencies, I would have liked to have thought that the amount of debt owed the state would be dropping, but it really has not. And this bill sets up a task force, but in what we want to do, my goal in this bill was already drafted, and I didn't have time to change it prior to the deadline of bill drafts. So my hope would be that this bill stays in this committee for now until we get a chance to work on some amendments, actually talk about how we can meaningfully lower the amount of debt, get people to pay, and maybe House Bill 2055 in its form will do the job good enough. But I'd like to believe there's more we can do. Specifically, there is about $340 million of general fund debt is what I'm most concerned about, because what Mr. Warner said about the report issued in 2001, that's actually an annual report, and the latest one was issued in December of 2002 by the Legislative Fiscal Office, and that report is online if you don't have the hard copy in your office. And what you will see in the Department of Revenue alone is owed about $340 million of general fund debt. And that was the amount I was particularly concerned about in light of our budget situation. Is there a way we can speed up the collection of that general fund debt to help us in our budget circumstances today? And I was thinking in the current biennium. After we had the conversation about House Bill 2055, I don't know that there is, because the private collection agencies, they said they're not willing or not able to absorb that amount of stuff right now. My plan was to dump all that into the private sector and say, go collect what you can.
Yeah.
And another possibility is actually to sell part of that. There are collection agencies out there that will buy back debt. The problem with that is they normally give about 3 cents on the dollar. And I didn't know that was such a good investment for us at this point in time. So that's what this bill is. It's got the relating to state agency debt collection practices, and we may need a task force to look at it. I'm not advocating for that right now. I think we need this bill in play to look at the issue of debt collection in the state and general fund and others. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. John, do you want to come up here from the Department of Revenue? Senator Beyer, if you might. If you have a second to stay with us, I think
sure.
It would be interesting, or whomever the department designates on this. If the committee has any questions, know that we have a vehicle.
I waited for John.
None.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. If there are any questions, I can try to answer them. Probably what would be most useful is to get some detailed information to you. We do have some reports. And if you'd like to have someone come speak to the committee, I would arrange that too, Mr. Chair.
Thank
or if
you.
There are
yeah.
questions.
my big thing in talking to Senator Beyer about this is, who is it that, and I'm not as well versed as some of my colleagues in terms of this issue, but who is it out there, and why are we having such a difficulty, and even our private collectors having a difficulty getting at these folks?
Mr. Chair, there's a broad spectrum of people that owe money to the state. Some people are just willful non-filers who believe that they don't have to file and pay their taxes. That's at one extreme. So we have a filing enforcement program that attempts to...
Do we garnish their wages? Do we...
Well, first we have to locate them. We have to find out who they are and estimate their tax liability and then try to collect it. And all of that takes time and effort, simply to find the people and then try to get them back into the system. And if they don't comply, then to estimate what their taxes are, which is what the law requires us to do. So some of the numbers in the reports are estimates of a liability. If they actually get into the system and file a return, that liability may be decreased. So that's one spectrum. There are people who get into trouble for 1 year, can't file, can't meet their obligation. They are afraid, and that continues for some time. Then there are other people who just don't have the resources to pay the tax. It runs the whole spectrum.
Would a private collector have access to private information that was confidential through the Revenue Department for collection purposes?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, I'm not certain of that. We do have very strict confidentiality rules by law, and however, once a debt goes to warrant, I believe that information is public. It would probably be better if I get you accurate information instead of speculating on that.
Let me ask you this. Are there any federal laws that protect confidentiality on private information that would not be accessible by a private collector?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, there are federal laws that protect, for example, a Social Security number or returns that are filed under the federal laws. As far as what exceptions exist for state and private collection activities, I'd need to get you some more information on that.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and one thing that with House Bill 2055 that the Revenue Committee or Department brought forward after I started asking some of the questions was a report detailing that $340 million of general fund and what it is. And one thing, the reason that has grown is because they estimate amount each year of people they think who are not filing returns at all and try to guess what that amount is, and that is the number that has been making the amount grow. Of that $340 million, they estimated, I think it was $73 million, is available to be turned over to private collection agencies. That is the amount that is not tied up by bankruptcy or the estimation process, or I mean, there's a list of about five or six different things that, and when you get to the bottom of that, it's about $70 million. And that was a very informative report, and I would encourage you to get that report on this issue. And then the entire report that is put out by Legislative Fiscal lists all state agencies, all funds. And to answer Senator Hannon's question somewhat, there are specific, like with child support and some of these other types of debt, there are some that the federal government prohibits going out to private collection agencies because of the confidentiality or federal laws or something like that. That's all detailed in great, you know, specificity. I can never say that word. I'm sorry. But in that report that Legislative Fiscal Office puts out on an annual basis, and I would encourage the committee to look at that, and anything we can do as a body to help collect all debt, not just general fund debt, will make the whole system work better and get at the cheaters.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannon.
If I can continue then. Last session we appropriated some additional funds for revenue collection on cigarette tax that was not being collected. What kind of performance or track record do you have from that to show us that you've enhanced the state revenue picture on the collection of this debt that was not being collected by revenue collections on cigarette revenue?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, I can get you that information. The task force was put together. It lost funding in one of the special sessions and was dismantled. It has had the funding restored, and they're getting back up in operation now. But I can certainly get you some information on that.
Do you have any comparison between what your success rate is? In other words, can you identify what the Department of Revenue has been able to generate for collection purposes as far as overall debt, percentage of collection rate equal that overall debt versus the private sector and what they're able to collect?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, if you're asking on all debt, not specific to cigarette revenues, then yes, we do have that in as part of that report, and I will get that.
It's part of this report?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and then one last question, Mr. Chairman. It's always interesting that we look at this concept, but if you had a whole bunch of private collectors coming in accessing this information into state government, my question is, would we just create a revolving door of people walking in off the street saying, I'm from XYZ collection agency and I need to have some information, and so you're going to be back here asking for revenue personnel to answer all these questions and provide information for debt collection? Does one side drive the cost for the other side from the private to the public?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, I'm not sure I have the answer to that question. It would certainly be something that you would need to consider as a policy matter.
Well, if I were in a collection agency and I showed up at the Department of Revenue and started asking for information, I'm sure you'd probably need additional personnel to answer my question as well as answer somebody else's question that might be standing there trying to collect a debt for somebody else.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, that's likely true. I believe the process now is that the debt is simply turned over to the private collection agency. They don't have any more contact with us. They make their own attempts to collect the debt. If they don't do that, the debt comes back.
I have to ask one more question, Mr. Chairman, because were you here in 1979?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, no, I wasn't.
Okay. There was a process server that brought a bill into the Oregon legislature, and it was called Messenger Bob. And he wanted to get exclusive rights as a private vendor to be the process server for the state of Oregon. That session, every bill we sent over to the House came back with a Messenger Bob amendment. Is this going to be the Messenger Bob amendment of the 2003 session?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, I don't believe I'm the person to answer that.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, maybe I think that question was directed at me. Actually, and I'll close with this because I know you got other things to get on in your agenda, but Senator Hannon brought up one of my frustrations is in each of the five special sessions, and in fact, the special session the last 2 weeks have been called, I have been frustrated that each and every time the Revenue Department has come forward and said, give us an extra $4 million and we'll collect you an extra $13 million in debt or in taxes. Yet, we've done that each time, and we haven't, and the tax collections still keep going down. And that has been a frustration of mine personally, that we keep giving them the extra $4 million and they don't seem to produce. And my question was, can we turn this over to private collection agencies? We don't have the personnel costs. We don't have PERS. We don't have everything else that goes with hiring these new people, bringing in the $4 million or whatever the number is extra. And if they can collect the $13 million, and what House Bill 2055 does is adds a fee above and beyond what they owe the state, so that the state is not losing a thing. That if the private collection person can collect it, they take their fee because it's added on to the amount of the bill, and the state gets their part. And that's what House Bill 2055, which will be on our floor soon, does. And that was been my frustration: is why do we keep giving extra money to the Department of Revenue, but yet the amount that's owed to us in general fund dollars continues to grow. So what are we getting for our money?
Deborah, on that point, could we track? I think that's an excellent point, and we should have a case study to be able to track what we just did in the sixth special session in terms of funding the additional collecting agents. And we should track, I believe, so we know. I think we would know relatively soon, maybe very relatively soon, what the production was with these additional collector positions. And I think that's important to get to Senator Beyer, but to certainly this committee, is how those additional positions are performing in the next 12 weeks in terms of additional collections.
Mr. Chair, we do track the collections, and we track the packages that are given to us. The $4 million and the $13 million was the restoration of staff that was lost in the across-the-board cuts. So the $4 million restored. Actually, I don't believe we've received $4 million. I think that was our share of the cuts. We've received less than that, but it was projected to generate $13 million with mm-hmm. that restoration. The cigarette tax task force was on track to collect what it had projected to do until it was cut. So we do track the revenue that's generated. As to the increase in the accounts receivable, again, I believe that's coming from the staff that we've received to do additional filing enforcement. And as I mentioned at the beginning, very often those are really difficult cases, locating taxpayers that haven't filed, trying to get them back into the system. When they refuse, estimating the tax that they're owed, sometimes that's overstated. But because you're increasing the accounts receivable, because you've identified taxpayers that haven't filed, there's a lag time in collecting those accounts. So your accounts receivable go up because you're setting up new accounts on people that you have found that haven't filed. Mm-hmm. And then it takes time, again, to collect those. So I think that's the explanation for an increase in accounts receivable. We have people out there trying to collect debt and identifying debt. So that's increasing the amount.
Mm-hmm. Senator Farrelly.
Mr. Chairman, we have, in fact, gone from the perspective in the last legislative session through funding additional revenue agents to the concept of tax amnesty to incent people to contact the agency to solve some of these revenue outstanding tax issues. We've, as Senator Beyer expressed his frustration, gone back and forth on that concept a couple of times in special sessions. I have some sense that we've let the opportunity to do a tax amnesty and then a referral of uncollectibles to the private sector as an option sort of slip through our fingers, not only in the past legislative session but during the five special sessions. So I appreciate the idea that we may be finally moving forward on a concept that creates this task force to explore the viability of some of these options. But I also think we run the danger of letting another legislative session go by having only created a task force rather than actually taking an action to authorize this agency to contract with the private sector to go into collections on their uncollectibles.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a significant aging in some of these accounts. Some of them are years old. Others are just in an indeterminate status. And with the contraction of FTEs at this agency and then an expansion, then a contraction, then an expansion, they simply have not had time on the target enough to produce significant results. What we need to do is clear the deadwood out of their backlog of files, turn those over to collection agencies, offer a very short window for a tax amnesty for voluntary compliance, sort of a last offer, and then if the date for the amnesty passes without action, then just pull the trigger on turning those collection files over to collection agencies on a fee base. So I feel a little bit frustrated that we didn't take this action in the 2001 legislative session. We had such a bill and such a proposal on the table. We were convinced by the agency that a better investment would be in revenue agents. Then, because there's been so much changing of minds in this legislature during the five special sessions, we never really fully implemented that plan. So either we should implement the plan, but notwithstanding implementation of additional FTEs for revenue collection, let it clear out that backlog of uncollectibles. Let these folks spend their time on files that are active that they can actually do some collections on.
This bill could be a vehicle for that discussion. And I think, I mean, rather than a task force, which Senator Beyer opened by, I think, disclaiming the idea of another task force, this bill with its relating clause could be a vehicle to do just that. Mr. Warner.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to say that we should make public the Department of Revenue's available accounts receivable we have up here from December of 2001, and it does break down the categories that Senator Farioli was mentioning. You have an estimate of the amount of accounts, which is about $293 million, and an estimated $67 million that has been assigned to private collection agencies. And then another, as Senator Beyer mentioned, there's a number of categories that are that make them unavailable for collections, which is about another $52 million. And from this report, again, it's the 01 report, it would be $174 million would be amount available for the Department of Revenue to collect. So of that, there's about $67 million that's assigned to private collection agencies and $174 with the department. This information is from the Department of Revenue.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannon.
Could we increase that number, Mr. Warner, if we put tax credits or tax deductions on a 10% or 20% hole for the next 3 years? Could we actually triple that money?
The amount of uncollectible?
Yes.
Possibly.
Okay.
That's possible, Senator.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for hearing the bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cannon. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 864. Members, I should have announced at the beginning, you have the -2 amendment somewhere in your stack in front of you on Senate Bill 550, which is the special ed and rural transportation issue that we've heard and will be back up tomorrow. members of the public, we have the amendments on the table available. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2622. Pat, you want to come up, Art? If you don't. Mr. Allen, even though you're in a new role now, if you want to introduce the bill and what we're doing here.
Thank you, Chair Deckard, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Allen. As you say, I'm careful to say I'm here on behalf of the Economic and Community Development Department. As of Monday, I don't actually work there any longer, having taken over a role as manager of the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. But this is one of those little jobs that kind of carries with you as you move on. House Bill 2622 is the House version of an identical Senate bill you have already heard in this committee. Both bills are intended to correct a problem with the e-commerce enterprise zone tax credit that renders it unusable for many businesses, especially those with a calendar fiscal year. And I can refresh your memory about the details of that problem if you'd like. A number of companies have announced or made investments in citing decisions based on their ability to use this credit, and quick action on this retroactive fix will assure those businesses of access to the tax provisions they were advised they would have available to them. At your hearing on the Senate version of this bill, Senate Bill 313, you asked if we could calculate the state income tax revenues created by the jobs associated with the e-commerce enterprise zone investments. I say calculated, estimated is probably a far fairer word. The short answer is that while it's too early in the history of these investments to give you exact figures, we can give you a range of returns based on some assumptions about the announced investments to date. In order to provide these figures, we use data from the Medford Enterprise Zone, which has the most complete information to this point and has been the most active in use of the program so far. We estimated anticipated capital investments, the expected job creation, and the wages associated with those jobs, and modeled the income tax revenue to the state based on those investments. We basically came up with a range of income to the state per 1,000 jobs created, and then applied that for calculation, applied that to the jobs that have been announced. For calculation purposes, we assumed all the jobs were created at the same time. This simplifies the calculation, but we know it's a departure from what's actually happening. In other words, the companies on whose investments these calculations are based will actually make those investments over a period of time, and that period of time will vary from company to company. All that really means is you can use these figures to get some kind of an estimate of the impact of the zone, but not to project the timing of actual cash flow. The companies involved forecast creation of 220 jobs and retention of up to 1,147 jobs. These are at a variety of wages, varying with each company and within each company, running from approximately $9 an hour to over $20 an hour, both exclusive of benefits. We calculate the five-year state income tax revenue from these created and retained jobs to range from a low of just over $8 million to a high of approximately $11.2 million. One final note, it's important to understand that the previous figures I just gave you are state income tax revenue in the first 5 years only. The numbers don't include any revenue from jobs that last longer than 5 years, and we expect that there would be such jobs. Future local property tax revenue isn't calculated at all, and this only deals with the direct immediate job creation, not the overall economic impact. And at this point, either Art or I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Fish, Mr. Allen? You know, one of the questions I have, and for me this has been a real success story from that Internet Commission in developing this bill and all the jobs that have been created, they all seem to be in one particular area. I believe we have enterprise zones in North Plains and Portland and then in Southern Oregon.
And it seems to be Burns as well.
And Burns, mm-hmm. And then, what, Roseburg and Medford?
Correct. One zone in Roseburg, one zone in Medford, and then Burns, Portland, and then the separate enterprise electronic commerce community designation, which attached to North Plains.
North Plains. So why is Roseburg and Medford seeming to do such a great job using this tool that we've given them in terms of locating employers there, and maybe the other three have not, as we've seen all the activity in those two communities?
Because we don't have a baseball team.
Or a municipal
utility. Couldn't possibly touch that. you'd have to speculate a little bit. I'd say it's a couple of different things. One is certainly interest and marketing. The economic development, local economic development organizations in those two communities, Roseburg and Medford, took a very early interest in this, got businesses individually interested in it during the legislative process in the last session, and have really been energized about it. Portland has certainly the marketing ability to pursue this, and it's just not been of the same level of interest there. I think it's the challenge for Burns, frankly, has simply been the size of the community and its fit with the kinds of businesses that are a good match with this program. It's a tougher sell. The capacity to do the selling is a little tougher there, and I think it's just sort of a confluence of different factors. But really, there has been a lot of interest for a long time in this program with businesses and the economic development communities in Southern Oregon.
Hmm. If I may, I can add some perspective to Chair Deckard, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Art Fish, with and currently staying at the Economic and Community Development Department. And I would just note, I mean, it's been, frankly, less than a year since we actually awarded these designations. So in many ways, maybe the question is not why have these other three not done as much, but how come Roseburg and Medford have had such a boom? And I think in some ways, and this influenced how they got designated, was they had some good ones in the wings, ready to go. I think Portland's looking at a little more of a longer term. They can't necessarily bring in the fast investments of this sort as quickly in the north-northeast area, maybe. I don't know. North Plains, I think, is still figuring out how to really do
this. You
don't
have to comment on the
North Plains. A little bit of a surprise, I think, on that one. And then the Burns-Hines has got some challenges, but I think it's really more remarkable that Medford and Roseburg have had the pieces in place and the excellent personnel that we work with in those areas to really just take jump on the opportunity. And hopefully this bill will fix an issue that has been one of our biggest bumps in the road.
Yeah, I've been very impressed. I mean, it's part of the original drafting of this first bill, I've been really impressed with Southern Oregon and how they've taken this. So are the Portland and Burns economic development officials, they're well-versed, they know the tool, they know what they've got, and they just haven't found the right mix.
Yeah, I think Portland has had discussions with a variety of companies, just nothing that's really been put in place yet. And I think both of them have very distinct, you've got Burns out there and you've got North-Northeast Portland. They both got their own challenges, but, I'm looking, I do hear good things as far as their efforts and some of the conversations they have with businesses.
Senator Hammond.
Mr. Chairman, in all seriousness, we did have
some prospects that were waiting in the wings, as Mr. Pace stated. We had Blue Cross, Regents Blue Cross, and some other companies that were on the cusp, and they were just waiting for the designation to go through to locate their businesses in Medford. So it was beneficial the moment that the area was declared e-commerce zone, and these businesses moved in. So it's been a real boom to the area.
Mr. Chair, if I could just follow up on that further comment. Of course, those companies waiting in the wings are actually the very ones that we need to do this bill to take care of, because they made those decisions on the assumption they could actually have access to the credit, and as things now stand now, that's probably...
That's why we're pushing ahead. Thank you very much. Good work. Welcome to your new role, Mr. Allen. Close public hearing on House Bill 2622. Open work session on House Bill 2622.
Is it ready to go, Mr. Chair?
It's ready.
I would move House Bill 2622 out to the Senate with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Hannon's moved House Bill 2622 to the floor with a do-pass. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Hannon, if I could carry that with you.
I'll yield to you, Mr. Chairman. Go ahead. And
great. I have a particular fondness for that bill. So
okay. No, that's fine.
Open a hearing on House Bill 2023. Mr. Malik.
Substituting for Elizabeth Mark Maher and Mr. Malik.
Doing kinesthetics with our LRO folks.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Mazen Malik, Legislative Revenue Office. House Bill 2023. A version that has been amended through the House. This bill comes to us from the county assessors, and this bill basically tries to adjust and make it more user-friendly, the indexing of the personal property tax calculation. Threshold of cancellation of property tax that was set at a certain level in the last session will be estimated at from $12,500 in an annual CPI estimate versus a 6 month CPI estimate that was approved last session. So that were the technical adjustment starts for this bill. And then the amendments for the bill also come, and they talk about the waiver of the penalties for the late payments of personal property tax when it's a mistake or an oversight of the taxpayer who needs to be paying in order to be able to give them an incentive, if you will, the carrot versus the stick approach.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannon.
I'm trying to figure out here. On it says Major History 2023, and then I look at the House bill and it says 2033, and it permits State Fish and Wildlife Director to suspend denial, renewal of, or refuse to issue licenses for non-payment of fines owed.
So I think this is bait and
which
switch
one?
Is what
this is a sneaky Senator Beyer again, you know? He's back.
Senator Starr pointed that out, too. I think
we have
we have managed to do this.
Yeah. You've managed to confuse us.
not at all.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Farrelly.
The confusion in this file should in no way deter us from taking action on this bill.
Oh,
of course not.
What else is
I was going to move right into work.
It's the assessor's fault. I knew it.
Talk about bait and switch.
Screw up the bill, Tom. Way to go. Got your number, buddy.
Wasn't me.
Mr. Wilson from NFIB, OFIB, any other? Just the FIB. You can join us.
Albacore Association.
It's the labor-friendly group, anyway.
Yeah. The Oregon Federation of Albacore.
Oregon Federation of Albacore. Tom? Good to see you this afternoon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Tom Linhares, the Columbia County Assessor representing the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. The threshold for canceling personal property has gradually gone up over a period of a number of years, recognizing that small mom-and-pop type businesses that only have maybe a desk and a calculator and a telephone, where they only have $2,000-$3,000 in value, it really costs more to process a tax bill, send it out, collect it, than the actual tax. So I think the cancellation threshold started out at $3,000, went to $5,000, then went to $10,000. Last session, what they did is they increased it to $12,500, but so that they wouldn't have to keep coming back and raising the threshold, they indexed it for inflation. The calculation for the indexing is through the first half of the year, so that we won't know, for example, the upcoming 2003-2004 tax year, what the cancellation threshold will be until late July. Well, since the returns are due March 1st, we're processing those returns without knowing what the cancellation threshold is. And in a small county like Columbia County, we literally calculate the value. This one's under 12.5, that one's over 12.5. This one gets canceled, this one doesn't. As we're going through that process, if we don't know what the cancellation threshold is, it just sort of complicates the process. What our original bill, House Bill 2323, does is just simply move that CPI calculation back 6 months through the end of the calendar year, so that we will know what the new cancellation threshold is in January. So come March 1st, when the deadline for filing the returns has come and gone, and we start processing those returns, we'll know what the cancellation threshold is. We're just moving back the time frame 6 months to make it easier for us to process the returns.
Thank you. Does the Albacore Commission, do you all have a position on this bill? Or
the NFIB does. J.L. Wilson representing the NFIB, Mr. Chair and members. I support this on two levels. First, because it modifies the bill which we asked for last session, which we talked about the cancellation ceiling, and the changes proposed by the assessors are fine. I wanted to clarify that the amendment that was in the House stems from the relative unsophistication, I should say, of some small businesses. That is, they don't know if they're tax liability when it comes to personal property taxes. It's not something that occurs to them that they are liable for. So this amendment says that the Board of Property Tax Appeals may take that particular instance into consideration when it's the very first time that penalty is assessed on a taxpayer, when it's the first year in which they are required to file and the first year in which they actually did file. So that has the effect of keeping out people who didn't file, filed and then didn't file for 4 years, from reaping. This is only for the very first time a taxpayer is late files on a personal property tax. I mean, just one, it applies one time and one time only, the first time. The written testimony I have is the most recent that I have in my file, because I actually hear about this issue quite a bit. You have a two-person auto body shop here in Grants Pass, and they had no idea that they were liable for a personal property tax, let alone what a personal property tax is. They get the bill plus the 100% penalty, and it creates hardship and acrimony where there doesn't need to be any. So this is one time and one time only, for the very first time an employer is liable for this tax. It says that the Board of Property Tax Appeals can take that into consideration for purposes of waiving that first year's penalty. Okay. And that's the extent of the amendment that we support.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannon.
JL, if you have it one time and the county assessor makes a mistake the next time, does it foreclose the opportunity of then going back the second time and say, we shouldn't have had it, it was a clerical mistake or something else? By doing it one time and one time only, does it foreclose going back a second time? I'm just trying to ask the mechanics of it.
Chair Deckard, Senator Hannon, I think how I'm reading is, does this retroactively apply?
No. Say I get a property, personal property tax statement, and I appeal it like these people did at the body shop in Grants Pass, and the bill takes care of it one time and one time only. But say 2 years from now, a clerk in the county assessor's office mistypes a number or something. Let's say that is a legitimate reason. It's just a miscalibration in numbers, and they get a property, personal property tax statement. Does it foreclose them from going back in a second time?
Well, Chair Deckard, Senator Hannon, does it foreclose the ability of the business to go in and
yeah.
appeal it? Well, under the statute, it says the Board of Property Tax Appeals can waive for all or portion of the penalty upon proper showing of a good and sufficient cause, which it seems to me under your scenario, it would certainly, a good and sufficient cause would
okay,
certainly qualify.
Okay, I just don't want to foreclose it if you have one and one chance only.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, it almost sounds like what you're talking about is a clerical error, which the assessor can correct on his own without having the property owner file an appeal with the Board of Property Tax Appeals.
Okay.
Property owners now can file an appeal to request the Board of Property Tax Appeals to waive the late filing penalty for good and sufficient cause. This amendment simply adds to that the additional reason for filing an appeal, that it was the first time they were required to file an appeal.
Okay, all right.
Because the way the rules were written, not knowing about the statute that required them to file a return, wasn't good and sufficient cause.
Okay.
So it was the first time in business, first time they had to file a return, they didn't know about it, that wasn't a good enough reason to file with the board and get the late filing penalty waived.
Okay.
This says specifically that that's a reason for waiving the penalty.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Committee, any questions on House Bill 2033? I thought we'd just go ahead and move that one, too, as long as we've got it in front of us.
I feel like I feel better when it had to do with the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
All right. Thank you very much. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2023 engrossed and open a work session on House Bill 2023.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2023 as a engrossed to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Farrelly has moved House Bill 2023 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Senator Farrelly, thank you very much. We are adjourned.